Case number 07-1461, Tesoro Refining and Marketing Company Petitioner versus Federal Energy Regulatory Commission, et al. Mr. Goldstein for the petitioner, Ms. Myers for the intervener, and Ms. Banta for the respondents.
Your Honors, may it please the Court. My name is Melvin Goldstein, and I represent the petitioner in this matter, Tesoro Refining and Marketing Company. This case arises under the Interstate Commerce Act. It involves a products pipeline that is regulated by the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission, which is by law obligated to charge no more than just and reasonable rates. My client is the shipper on that pipeline. The undisputed facts in this case demonstrate that for at least 3 years, the pipeline at issue in this case has been exceeding its cost of service. Cost of service is a manner in which the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission determines whether or not the pipeline is charging just and reasonable rates. The FERC requires every interstate pipeline to submit a Form 6 in which it specifies what its costs are and what its revenues are. The costs include an allowable profit, and this form is filled out by the company itself. So the company fills out the form in which it discloses what it believes its costs, its allowable return, and what its revenues are. The pipeline at issue in this case, CalNEV, has for the last 3 years filed a Form 6 which demonstrates that it is charging unjust and unreasonable rates according to the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission's definition of what is just and reasonable rates. My client, therefore, as it is permitted to do by Section 13 of the Interstate Commerce Act, filed a complaint. It filed a complaint when the pipeline at issue here wished to increase rates that were already unjust and unreasonable by a further amount. The Federal Energy Regulatory Commission told my client, you may not file such a complaint, and we will not hear your complaint that this pipeline, which is already charging unjust and unreasonable rates, cannot continue to charge those rates and, in fact, increase those rates. We believe that that position by the FERC is so directly...
Let me back you up just a minute. It is in your brief, and it's in what you just said, that the commission itself concedes the rates are unjust and unreasonable. What is that statement based on? Where did the commission concede that the rates are unjust and unreasonable?
There is no explicit statement by the commission.
Why did you say that in your brief?
Well, because you put together the different statements.
The commission itself concedes are unjust and unreasonable. I couldn't find it. I spent some time looking for it. And you know, when a counsel says somebody else has conceded a point, you expect him to give you a citation where that isn't. I thought, surely this man is not claiming there's a concession when he doesn't have one to cite. And I'm learning now that you are claiming a concession and you can't tell me where the concession is.
Well, the commission has stated that when a pipeline's cost of service exceeds its cost of service, the rates being charged are unjust and unreasonable.
They didn't concede that in the last case we had on this, and I don't see a concession in this case on this.
There are cases in which the commission has directly said that.
There are cases in which the commission has found that to be true in that case. There are other cases that say that there are other methodologies of rate making besides cost of service.
Now, yes,
I've had one of those argued within the last 48 hours, I think. That's not the only method of rate making.
Well,
to claim that an opponent has conceded something they haven't conceded is not the kind of practice that we expect before this court, counsel.
Well, I apologize if I went further than I should have. I was simply putting together what the commission has established as principles.
Anytime your opponent's made a concession, if you can't put a citation in there to where they made that concession, you may want to take that part of your brief out, or you may find yourself answering questions like this.
Well, I apologize, Your Honor. I was putting together principles which the agency has firmly established. There are three rate-making principles that I'm aware of that the agency has established. One is market-based rates. That doesn't apply here. Another is settlement rates. That doesn't apply here. The third is cost of service rates. That does apply here. And the agency has said that when you're in a cost of service mode, when your cost of service exceeds, when your revenues exceed your cost of service, your rates are unjust and unreasonable. There is a further way in which you can increase your rates, and that is through an inflationary index. And the inflationary index, the agency has said, does not supplant the overall requirement that just and reasonable rates be established. Therefore, in this case, we are left just with a cost of service regulatory mode. And in that cost of service regulatory mode, when a pipeline submits a Form 6 that says that it is receiving more revenues than its cost of service permits it to receive, it is charging illegal rates. That is the situation that we have here. I apologize if I went the step further instead of the agency.
The commission says that you have three options. One is to claim that the baseline rate is unjust and unreasonable. Two is to challenge the increase through the indexing method. And three is to file a complaint claiming that the Form 6 is inaccurate. Right? That's the way the commission sees it.
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay. You're arguing, as I understand it, that if in filing your complaint regarding the indexing increase, inflation-adjusted increase, that you should also be able to challenge the baseline rate.
No, Your Honor. We are simply challenging the increment to a rate that is already unjust and unreasonable.
In other words, you accept the baseline rate, but you say you can't increase it by the index because the baseline rate is already over the top.
Well, we don't for the purpose of this particular complaint, we accept the baseline rate. Not for all purposes.
Yeah, that's what I mean.
Pardon me?
All we have right now.
Yeah, that's what I mean.
That's right. For the purpose of this case, we accept the baseline rate, and we challenge simply the increment, and we claim that because the baseline rate is, by the pipeline's own statements, unjust and unreasonable.
Now, what was the commission's response to that argument?
The commission's response to that argument is there's a different way that you need to proceed in order to make that challenge. You can only challenge.
Where is that in the JA exactly? In the joint appendix?
It is in the commission's decision in which they refer to a companion case in which they established a number of principles. The first principle they establish in the companion case is that where you have a pipeline that is exceeding its cost of service and wishes to increase its rates further through the inflationary index, you can challenge that increment
if it's substantial.
Only if the costs of the pipeline are substantially different from the amount of the indexation rate.
You have an argument against that, right?
Pardon me?
You have an argument against that?
Yes.
And what was the argument that you have against that ever presented to the commission itself?
The argument that we have against that.
Commission says it was never presented. That you're raising it for the first time in this petition for review?
We did not present the argument that the commission's policy was unreasonable in a reconsideration request, but the commission has already considered that argument in other contexts and rejected it.
So this is a frustration claim on your part that we would have lost anyway?
Based on the commission's position, there is no doubt that we would have lost anyway because others.
Would it be a futility argument?
Pardon me, Your Honor?
Would it be a futility argument?
Yes, Your Honor. Others who have presented that very argument lost. The commission ruled shortly after it issued the decision in our case that they were not going to change that particular policy.
And there's no requirement of the rules that you seek rehearing, right?
There is none, Your Honor.
And you're saying this issue was already in front of the commission?
Correct, Your Honor.
Did you raise it at any stage before the commission, your argument here?
Well, we did. We raised it in our initial complaint when we presented the facts that this is a pipeline that has been charging unjust and unreasonable rates and now seeks to increase its rates further.
You're still under an obligation to, regardless of the fact that you're not under the Natural Gas Act or the Federal Power Act, you're still under an obligation to exhaust your administrative remedies.
Well, we have exhausted our administrative remedies.
That means not just going through the motions, but also presenting the arguments that you're presenting to the court. So we have a commission adjudication, and we have something to review, not just the brief. The brief is not going to do the trick after Meade and a number of other Supreme Court cases. We need a formal adjudication to make our determination about what the commission's position is, and you have not given the commission an opportunity to do that.
Well, you do have the commission's position in cases that arose shortly after that.
Not in your case.
We did not ask for reconsideration. We presented the facts.
No, I'm not talking about reconsideration. There is a reconsideration question here, but you have to present the arguments initially. Now, as far as reconsideration is concerned, the statute of limitations question seems to me to be one in which you should have presented a petition for reconsideration, because it was not necessarily true that you would have to anticipate the way in which the commission disposed of your claim on 2005.
But Your Honor, when we presented our complaint to begin with, we presented all of the arguments that the commission now has in front of it. We presented the argument of what the pipeline did. We presented the argument of the increment increasing those illegal.
Where did you present? Well, let's just take it from the back. Where did you ever present an argument about the meaning of the 2-year statute of limitations and the word tender? You never presented anything to the commission.
No, we did not present that argument in detail to the commission.
In detail?
Well, we didn't present that argument.
You didn't present anything to
them. Well, we didn't know the commission was going to rule
against
us on statute of limitations.
But under the Supreme Court's opinion in Lady Garment Workers, you were obligated to file a rehearing petition then to exhaust your remedies. If the commission sua sponte decides something you could not anticipate, the Supreme Court in Lady Garment Workers says you have to file a petition for rehearing. That's in an NLRB case where there's no obligation to file a rehearing petition like in the Natural Gas Act, but you have to do it. Otherwise, you haven't exhausted. So,
well, it is true we did not, on the statute of limitations argument, file a petition for reconsideration. Mm-hmm. I see that my time has expired.
Okay. Thank you, counsel. We'll give you back a couple of minutes for rebuttal.
Thank you.
We'll hear from
Good morning, Your Honors, and may it please the Court. I'm Elizabeth Myers, and I'm appearing on behalf of intervener BP West Coast Products. In my few minutes here, if the Court will permit, I'd like to make 4 points. The first being that, in our view, this is a case about protests and complaints having been dismissed by the Commission against index rates. Rather than hear complaints, as it promised this Court it would in ExxonMobil versus FERC, the Commission is now dismissing index complaints as well as the protest against the index rates. The Commission instead says we must challenge the base rates on a cumulative basis in order to get to the index. The problem with that is an ineffective remedy. The challenges to the base rates never, in fact, get to the index increment, which is what Tesoro here is trying to challenge and BP in other cases has been trying to challenge. Instead, what happens in the base rate cases is the commission will index forward those rates by automatically applying the index to whatever just and reasonable rate is determined as a result of adjudication of the complaint. Second, as in our table appended to our joint reply brief, the table demonstrates that to pursue a base rate case takes years and years. There are complaints that are still not finally resolved after 16 years. And subsequent or cases are held in abeyance. Finally, the commission promised the court in AOPL versus FERC, which was the appeal of the rulemaking which established the indexing regime, that it would not shift the burden of proof to the shippers to prove, to justify rates. Instead, the burden was to be retained by the pipeline to prove that the new rates were just and reasonable. We submit to the court that by requiring these general complaints, the burden has indeed been shifted, which is not appropriate under the Interstate Commerce Act, which imposes the burden on the pipeline to justify a new rate. And further, when the pipeline admits that its rates are unjust and unreasonable in the Form 6, the FERC will not act unless the shipper can
say our rates are unjust and unreasonable.
The Form 6 gives you numbers of revenues and costs of service, and by reviewing that, you can tell if the revenues are substantially in excess of the costs.
Did you hear the other counsel arguing and what I asked him and said to him about claiming concessions that are not there?
Yes, Your Honor.
I have something you can quote to me where they admit it's unjust and unreasonable.
I believe if you look at the standard that
you have something you can quote to me where they say it's unjust and unreasonable.
Yes,
where they admit that.
In the June 8th companion order, where the commission set that proceeding for hearing, the commission looked at the Form 6, and because the revenues were in excess of the cost of service, that was the reason in that order that proceeding was set for hearing. On rehearing,
did I misunderstand you saying the pipeline admitted it was unjust and unreasonable?
No, you did not, because
I didn't misunderstand you. And you're not quoting me anything the pipeline where they admitted that.
What I'm suggesting is that the Form 6 itself, which is a document prepared by the pipeline submitted under oath,
that's evidence that you would say establishes it's unjust and unreasonable. That is not an admission by a party opponent. I really do not like to hear counsel make claims that concessions and admissions have been made that have not been made. Before you claim a party has admitted something, you be prepared to show the court where they admitted it. That's not the kind of practice we like to see before this court.
I understand, Your Honor.
We do see very often.
I understand and appreciate the point, Your Honor. Let me move on.
Please. We'll give you a couple more minutes since I used a lot of yours.
Thank you, Your Honor. The commission will take the Form 6 as is.
Can I go back a little bit? I'm looking over your brief, and on pages 9 to 10, and you say there that CalNEV filed another rate increase on May 25th, 2007. Tesoro intervened, as did you, BP West, right? And the commission ruled that the Form 6 did not established that the pipeline was seeking a rate increase while it was already significantly over recovering its cost of service. Right? I'm reading from your brief.
Yes, sir.
So if that's true, if you have accurately said that, then there's no way that the commission can be charged with conceding the opposite of what it held. That CalNEV was, you're claiming CalNEV was significantly over recovering, whereas you say in your brief the commission ruled just the opposite.
I'm afraid I don't have an answer for that, Your Honor, except that my understanding is the Form 6 indicates for those years that CalNEV was over recovering its rates.
Yeah, but the commission, you say the commission said that was not true. Anyway, okay.
In closing, Your Honor, if I may, Your Honors. This case, in our view, is really about whether the commission can deny both protests and complaints with respect to index rates, thereby leaving the shippers with an ineffective remedy. In his partial dissent to Order 561, which was the establishment of the index rate-making regime, former Chairman Hecker predicted that there may come a time where rates and costs so diverged as a result of the application of the index that the rates were unjust and unreasonable. And he was concerned that there would be an impossibility for shippers to correct this, that there would be no opportunity. We submit to Your Honors that the time has come, that there, by virtue of denying protests and denying complaints, there is now, and allowing forward indexing, there is now no opportunity for shippers to challenge only the index increment of the rate.
Thank you, counsel.
Thank you.
We'll hear from the government.
Good morning. I'm Carol Banta for the commission. With me at council table is Charles Caldwell, representing CalNEV as intervener. First, the court is correct that none of the policy challenges raised here were raised in this proceeding, not in the complaint, not on rehearing, not in any other filing. And the commission, in responding, certainly has drawn unusually on subsequent cases to defend that in the brief to the extent the court would even get to it. But this court has held many times in Brooklyn Union Gas and in other cases that things that the commission does, actions and statements in orders subsequent to the challenged orders just aren't before the court. And in the later orders where the commission did get into these policy issues, those petitions have been filed and are in abeyance before this court. So those cases have
they been argued, any?
No, they're in abeyance because once the arguments were raised here, we put them in abeyance. Oh. But the point being that those were cases that the commission addressed after this case, in some, I believe, even relying on the new standard that was articulated.
But, you know, there is this in the – we have – matter of fact, I wrote one of the opinions in a case called Avocados Plus where we have two lines of authority. One is jurisdictional exhaustion, which is the Gas Act and the electric. And the other is non-jurisdictional exhaustion, where we require it. And the Supreme Court has, in the Madigan case and McCart and a lot of other cases, acknowledged that reviewing courts can require exhaustion even if the statute doesn't, because of our obligation to review what the agency says as opposed to what your brief says. But there is a doctrine in the non-jurisdictional exhaustion area, a futility doctrine. Judge Santel may represent. Do you know of any cases, and this is a really kind of obscure point, in which the futility doctrine was invoked in light of decisions after the agency had adjudicated the case? Not before, but afterwards. Because that's what we have here, isn't
right.
it?
Right. I don't know the answer to that. And, of course, we hadn't framed our argument in terms of exhaustion, but what we were looking at was this court's opinion in ExxonMobil, which when you look at the cases that this court cited in ExxonMobil, such as the auto safety, I forget the long name, but the auto safety case, and Sims versus Apfel, those cases were talking about something called issue exhaustion, which seemed to be distinct from exhaustion of administrative remedies. So I don't know the answer to that, but I do know, again, that we're certainly familiar with cases. I in particular know Brooklyn Union Gas because I argued it, where this court says the fact that the commission did X in some order that came out after your orders is just irrelevant to what's before the court. So we were drawing sort of on the FERC background. I don't know the answer in terms of more general exhaustion. And again, we were looking at the issue exhaustion.
Well, the whole exhaustion doctrine is in part driven by considerations of efficient agency operation, but it's also driven in quite large part, as the Supreme Court acknowledged, by efficient administration of judicial resources. So
sure. And this court in ExxonMobil in particular cited also the administrative record that the court has to work with. You have nothing in this record to address these policy challenges. Were the court to want to go there, you would have to look at FERC orders that were not only not in this proceeding, but after this proceeding. And in addition, the ExxonMobil court also talked about just fairness to the parties.
Yeah, we couldn't say that the agency acted arbitrary and capriciously because it didn't address arguments that were never made to it.
Right. Mm. Right. Mm. And certainly when these arguments are made, as the commission showed in the later orders, it's willing to address them and did address them in some detail. And, of course, on the statute of limitations point, Judge Randolph, as you pointed out, the commission never had the opportunity to correct what may well have been an error, owing not in small part to the complaint that asked for reparations beginning in July 2005. So the commission was apparently confused, but never had the opportunity to reconsider that before coming to court. And to clarify, the commission isn't asking to have that remanded to it to fix the error. In ExxonMobil, this court didn't remand to the commission to fix the alleged mathematical errors that parties had raised that the court said, you didn't raise those below, we're not going to consider them. It remanded on a totally separate issue in part. Also, just to point out, although it's not part of this case, it is, I think, cited in the petitioner's complaint. To the extent that there may be over-recovery in the pipelines, that the pipeline may be over-recovering, Tesoro brought a complaint, as did BP, I believe, against CalNEV, against the base rates in a separate proceeding, making exactly that argument. And the commission didn't say this is unjust and unreasonable. That's yet to be held, but said we find reasonable grounds to believe that may be unjust and unreasonable. We're setting it for hearing. So there is an ongoing proceeding about the base rates and any over-recovery that may or may not be in those base rates, which we'll look into the cost of service. This was the index case and the argument about whether, looking to the language of the regulation, section 343.2C, are there reasonable grounds to believe that the index increase...
Once it sets the base rate for investigation and then indexing occurs, is the indexing subject to refund?
Yes. Yes, because the index is an inflationary increase. So what happens in these base rate cases, after litigation, you come to a just and reasonable rate for, say, year 2000 in some case, in year 2000. But by now it's 2004 or whatever. You index that forward using the percentage inflationary index for 2001, 2002, 2003. Now, in the meantime, if the pipeline has been receiving rates that were higher than that, those subsequent years' rates are knocked down as well, and reparations are paid. Now, if it's as a complaint proceeding, the reparations only go to the parties that complained, as opposed to if it were an investigation of a pipeline filing, then it's refunds and all the shippers get them, if I understand correctly. So, yes, it's not that we would look at each year and say, well, a 6% increase in this year.
Once it's set for investigation, then that triggers the refund responsibility if ultimately the ruling is against the pipeline?
Right. If it's a pipeline filing. Like I said, with a complaint, it's reparations.
Right.
Yeah. As it would be here, because the Tesoro and BP filed a complaint against CalNEV's base rates. One comment... As to the argument that base rate cases take a long time, well, they're complex. That's exactly what the commission said here about why you can't bring in a whole challenge to the cost of service in the index case, because you turn the index case into, you bring in the complexity that we want to deal with in the base rate context. These aren't situations where the commission is sitting on these cases for years. This court knows better than anyone. You've seen SFPP's base rate case come up twice in the last few years on the income tax allowance, the substantially changed circumstances.
It came out through different ways.
Exactly. So these base rate cases are complex, and they deal with a lot of issues. And if you're going to challenge what goes into the cost of service, that's why some of these cases have taken the years that they've taken. They're moving forward. The commission is acting on remand. I believe it's already issued some orders on remand. But, yes, a base rate case is complicated. That's entirely the commission's point in this regard. I can address any questions the court has about the various arguments, but I don't want to take your time.
Thank you, counsel.
All right. Thank you.
We'll give the petitioner back 2 minutes for rebuttal.
Thank you, Your Honor. I'd like to address several points quickly. In terms of getting the refunds on an inflationary index case, that does not always happen when the agency simply indexes forward, because it does not evaluate the cost in the subsequent years to determine whether further refunds should be granted beyond simply applying the inflationary index. In terms of a base rate case, Your Honor, Let me switch gears a second and address the exhaustion of remedies issue. And I want to address it in terms of futility, because futility and the exhaustion of and giving the agency an opportunity to respond is an equitable doctrine. And the equities here, I would suggest, strongly argue against ruling that the agency has not had a fair opportunity. The subsequent decisions that the agency issued indicate quite clearly that it had no intention of revising its ruling based on the arguments which we made, which were also made to it. And I would also ask the court to look what happens if, in fact, we have to go back to the agency, or had to go back to the agency. Another year and a half would have expired before we could come back to this court And in terms of the base rate case, this case on the base rate case for Tesoro was filed in January of 2007.
Suppose none of the subsequent cases had been finally resolved yet. Would you lose?
It would be harder for me to win, but I think I could still win based on the facts that I showed the agency in the complaint. It is clear what we're arguing here is that the agency's ruling is contrary to the Interstate Commerce Act.
Counsel, Judge Randolph asked the government a question that I think we should ask you. Do you know of any cases in which futility doctrine is invoked based on subsequent decisions?
No, Your Honor, I don't. It's just
a little strange, doesn't it?
Just the decisions that we cited in our brief, and I would argue that equitable doctrines should lead you to use subsequent decisions to determine the futility argument.
It's a strange intellectual exercise to say we know it's futile. We knew we didn't have to raise it because somebody else raised it in a case that was decided after ours.
In the future, and we knew how the commission, we could predict how the commission was going to rule.
Yeah.
The commission.
You don't have to raise that because, well, commission has another case later on.
The futility doctrine that we hear it argued usually says, well, the commission has had this case several times before, therefore we didn't have to raise it.
The commission has rules.
Come in and say, well, they've decided it since then, therefore we didn't have to raise it. It's a bit of a stretch, isn't
it? I understand your point, Your Honor, but the commission's decision was so strongly in favor of upholding this rule, both in the companion case as well as in the Tesoro case, it left little argument, really, for the commission to revise its views based on our coming to the commission and saying the Interstate Commerce Act prevents you from doing that.
Thank you, counsel.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Our case is submitted. Give us a recess.